Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Today's episode of Don't Make Me Come Back There is brought to you by Dow Vineyards and Winery, an exceptional wine tasting experience just a few hours outside of LA. Immerse yourself in beautiful views, world-class wine, and feeling like you are part of the Dow family. Go to dowvineyards.com/don't make me come back there for an exclusive offer for backseaters. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Don't Make Me Come Back There. We are a funny podcast about family. My name is Dustin Nickerson. I'm a stand-up comedian, the host of the aforementioned podcast, and I need to cough real quick.
That's staying in.
We are a funny podcast about family, and alongside me is co-host and producer and stand-up comedian Stephen English.
Hey,
we're
man.
Here. Oh, man. We are doing it.
Yeah.
We're back in studio / Stephen's front room / main room.
/ the only... But there's two rooms in this entire
house.
There's
two rooms.
Bedroom in this room.
Yeah, exactly. You pee in the sink.
Yeah.
Just as the Lord would want it.
Just
Stephen's
like
here getting updates from SNL that he needs to check out some new videos. But we are not doing that right now. We're not watching SNL videos.
We are
here to tell you about our podcast. Gosh, thank you so much, everybody, for tuning in.
Right.
Oh, we love you, backseaters. You're the very best. We're so glad that you guys are back. And if this is your first time here, oh, I'm so nervous. I get so nervous on first dates.
Right.
I always feel like I'm going to say something awkward that really ruins it. You
and
know?
You would have. You went on more than one first date.
Yeah, that's true.
You went on one first date and then you married her.
And I was like, you know what?
This
I
is so
like
bad.
To, honey,
I can't do this again.
I looked at her in the eyes and I said, what are you doing for the next 70 years?
Right.
Actually, 40. Heart disease runs in my family.
Right. Yeah, she said picking on a new husband halfway through.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
That's not a bad route to go. So
it's good. It's good.
Thanks for tuning into our little podcast, The Could. We are so excited to have you guys. And today, everybody, we have a fun episode. We have an episode with a comedian and actor, Johnny Sanchez.
Mm-hmm.
Johnny is a very, very funny comedian that you may know from Mad TV and a variety of other Netflix, other TV credits. Credentials that this man has.
Is that what? I thought credits was short for something, but it's just
what
credits.
What did you think it was short for?
I don't know, like creditos?
Creditos. What is a credito? That sounds like a
tiny
cheap
credit.
Mexican gum.
It's a very tiny credit. It's like when you're in a TV show, but only like just your butt is in it.
Just your butt.
Right.
Okay.
Grow up, Steven. You have a kid. You're
this
a father.
Is, yeah, it's a young child right now. A credito does sound, it sounds more like a snack to me.
Yeah.
Actually, a credito is what you get if you go to Mexican Community College.
Right.
Hot intro that we have, everybody. But don't worry about this intro because the episode with Johnny Sanchez is so, so good.
Right.
If you guys aren't familiar with Johnny Sanchez, there's a few different ways that you can find him on the interwebs.
Mm-hmm.
He's all over the place. You can find him on Twitter at J Sanchez Comic. You can find him on Instagram over at Johnny Sanchez Comic. And he also has a podcast that he has called The Best of Everything, where wherever you're listening to this podcast, you can listen to that podcast as well. So check that out. And in this episode, we talk a lot about stuff. We talk about our various childhoods and how comedy kind of connected us in our childhood, his days on Mad TV. We talk about the tension of going from protecting your kids to also trying to foster some independence there. We talk about his childhood, having three older sisters and being a baby of the family. We get into it, man.
Yeah.
So I hope you enjoy this episode with my new friend, Johnny Sanchez. We recorded it in the green room of a new comedy club in Escondido, California. Esco.
Let's go.
Esco, go. I tried to do an escargot thing, but it didn't really work.
Don't do it.
Yeah, and if you guys were at that show, I just want to thank you for coming out, because I know you have a lot of late night entertainment options in Escondido.
Right. You can go watch that crazy lady feed the pigeons.
It was that. You could see a drug deal in the 7-Eleven.
Right.
Or you could come watch me middle for Johnny Sanchez. Right. It's a hot new club. You should cool. check it out. I think I recommended you, actually.
Yeah, and I emailed the guy, and he hasn't. He's seen my email. I can see it because I Facebook messaged him, so I've seen. I know that he's seen the message. But
I
want to
have the confidence of somebody who has their red message on iMessage.
Dude, my nephew has it, and it's strange because I would figure like because he's like 20, so I was like, is this how 20-year-olds like? I think maybe it's like a thing where it
left
shows,
him on red. That's a thing. That's like a phrase in the vernacular, right?
And I think also it's like a way. I think it's a way of them like, you know, like when we were younger and they had your favorite friends on like MySpace,
top eight, top nine, or whatever.
Like
on
T-Mobile, you had like the people like
and if
in
you
your
didn't
fave
have
five,
very many friends, you had to have Tom.
Right. But I think that's a way of like showing like, hey, you see my red, and I'm not gonna leave you on red.
I know, yeah, leaving my red's like a real thing.
Yeah,
and it hurts my feelings.
Right, when my nephew texts you,
when me and your nephew are texting on the reg, he texts me back.
Yeah,
because let's be honest, I was talking to my wife about this earlier today. Like, I regularly text like three people.
Sure,
my wife,
mm-hmm.
you,
mm-hmm.
and even you and I sometimes leave each other. We give each other like 8-hour gaps.
Right.
Because you work.
Right.
And I'm always in and out of different time zones.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. Yeah.
A lot of time I have to text you like, hey, FYI, I'm in New York
right
now. Right.
Because you'll say like today and I'll get it at like what is.
Yeah.
What would see, you know, like sometimes there, we've had that. We've actually had that problem before mm-hmm. where you said like, what do you want to do for today?
Right.
And it came at a time that I thought it was. Because it was after midnight right. for me. So I was like, it was this weird thing where I was like, oh, he must mean for.
And you're like,
hey,
I'm going to get this to you later today. Which means at 11:59 before the day becomes right. the next day.
Yeah, yeah, buddy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I take it real literally.
Well, it was technically Thursday.
Yeah.
But there's like two or three people that you text. And right. then when somebody else comes in, you're like, ah.
Right.
Do you do that thing where you're like, I'll see the text and I intentionally don't open it because I know right. I don't 100%. Have time to respond to it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because you can see like the preview comes up and you're like, oh, this is from such and such.
Yeah.
I know I'm going to have to respond eventually, but yeah, they're important enough to where you want to respond to them, but not important enough where you're gonna do without a reminder.
Give me 3 weeks.
Right.
Give me 3 weeks to 3 hours
and
somewhere
that
in that time
just
frame.
Sitting there.
Just,
That dot is just sitting there just mocking you.
Sometimes somebody will leave you on red and then text you like a week later and you're like, what made you think of me?
Right.
Why now?
Right.
Why did it come back? But anyways, Johnny didn't leave us on red.
Nope.
He did the podcast. Right. We did this before our shows there. Actually, I'm going to be headlining the Grand in Escondido in, oh man, I don't think tickets are on sale yet, but if you're in North County, San Diego, I'm going to be there. May 29th and 30th. So check that out.
Yeah.
That's a nice little segue into all my other dates. This is coming out Tuesday, the 25th. So if you're in Nashville tomorrow, I'm at Zany's Comedy Club.
Zany.
Thursday, I'm at the Improv in Raleigh. April 3rd and 4th, I'm at Wise Guys Comedy Club in West Jordan, Utah. April 5th, I'm in Denver. Comedy Works. April 16th, I'm at the Improv in Ontario, California. Stephen English is on that show.
Yeah, buddy.
May 15th through 17th, Tacoma Comedy Club. May 22nd, The Old Church in Portland. May 24th, Starline Social Club in Oakland. And this was just added. July 17th and 18th, The Comedy Loft in Washington, D.C. Go to DustinNickerson.com/shows. To pick that up.
Right.
If you want some extra stuff right there. And if you want some extra content from this podcast,
mm-hmm.
go check out our Patreon.
Yeah.
Please. There's seven of you right now, but I'll tell you, it's a fire seven.
Yeah. It's actually, Ooh. Honestly, we should probably just cap it.
I don't think that's a challenge.
Just the best seven.
To all of you, to the thousands of you that listen to this podcast. And that's not an exaggeration. The
Literally,
thousands
yeah.
of you that listen to podcasts, not yeah. you're too weak. You can't keep up with that fire
that seven
that we have right now.
Right.
It was like, I want the sticker. I want the poster.
Right.
I want that bonus content.
There you go.
I want the 5 questions, 10 minutes.
There you
I
go.
Want the interview review. Mm-hmm. I want Dustin to send me thrift store gifts once a month.
The cure for the coronavirus we have.
It's all there.
Yeah.
Patreon.com/don't make me come back there.
Right.
If you can.
/coronavirus.
If you dare.
if, yeah.
Anyways, we hope you guys enjoy this episode. I think that's all I got. I did want to check one email before we get going here. Okay. This email is from Dan. Okay, this has become a very controversial topic on our podcast ever since I was on Annie Downs' podcast about this subject, frozen jeans.
I still don't get it.
This is Dan's email. What kind of dark magic are you using as a parent that freezing your jeans is good enough?
Right.
I can barely make it a week before my jeans are used as a napkin or just become the collateral damage of uncoordinated preschoolers. First off, that's on your preschoolers, not mine. My kids are all little LeBrons.
Right, get them through some drills. Get some tires. Put them through some
Get the ladder out.
Yeah, get them through. Yeah, exactly. That's on you, buddy.
Come on, get them some have them throw while they catch at the same time. Yeah. This is doable. Work this out.
We'll add to the Patreon some drills for your preschoolers.
This is kinesiology 101.
Yeah,
all right?
Kinesiology.
Do you not let your kids around you when you wear your jeans, or can I buy an upgraded freezer that get rid of Cheeto handprints? Dan from Montgomery-ish. Okay. This will not be the last time that we talk about this, but I will talk about this now.
Right.
Do not wash your jeans. Don't do it.
Okay.
Do not wash your jeans. This is coming from the CEO of Levi's on a blog that I read maybe 8 years ago.
Sure.
Who knows if it was that. Here's the thing. We all know that when you wash your jeans, it ruins your jeans. Everybody knows that.
I don't think everyone knows that.
Well, I'm telling you that right now.
I think
washing your jeans is bad for the jeans. They don't look as good. They fit weird. It's not good. Denim's not meant to be in the wash and then the dry. It's not there.
You know, okay, here's the deal.
It's bad for them.
Here's the deal. Yes, when they invented jeans, that was probably true. Yes, when Levi Strauss came here from Austria
on the washboard,
and he did one of those. What's those?
Dude, people don't realize that's why I don't use a washer. I'm just putting them on my abs.
Oh,
just
brother.
All day, and my two very different nipples that I showed you earlier today.
There's no easy way to say this. I kept telling you stop showing me.
I have two nipples. One looks like a plate. One looks like a bowl.
I mean, they are. I mean, it's not even over exaggerating to say they are wildly
different.
They look
like two different frisbees. That one that you use for the throwing and one they use for the putting in frisbee golf.
Yeah,
I think they're from different nations.
I said if you were in one of those erotic, you go to a bar and they have like the little touchscreen game and the erotic photo shirts, and it's like what's
I don't know this reference.
Yes, like the big machine. You go to the bar and there's like on the bar
the bowl machine.
There's a big machine on the bar, and it's just like a TV, but it's a touchscreen. You can do like you can play little games on it. Okay. And one of the themes is always erotic, and one of them erotic, and it's always and they have one where it's like what between two pictures, and it's like what is different
the
between
difference.
The two pictures, and if you took your nipple on one and your other nipple on the other one, people would lose their minds because they would be tapping that nipple being like, this is obviously a different person's nipple. And they would just lose. People would break those machines.
Man, I usually play shuffleboard at the bar.
Right. I'm just doing erotic photo searches. Everyone's like, Steve, you want to come over here? Like, we're just having a good time. I'm like, no, just give me some more quarters.
I just want to look at the difference between
quarters.
These two nipples. Well, maybe if I put my nipples in the freezer, they would look at like the same size, but maybe that would be. So here's the thing.
Right.
Put your jeans when you have stains, you do a little wash is what you do.
Okay.
But when your jeans smell, you put them in the freezer. It takes the smell out. Then you don't have to throw them through the rigmarole of getting all torn up. That's what look at what your washer and your dryer do to your clothes. It's hard on clothes.
Okay.
You put them in the freezer. It gets rid of the smell. You hand wash for the stain. It's not a big deal. It's not dark magic. It's what you do.
I don't think it's what you do. Here's the deal. Well, you know what's funny is you're a jeans guy.
Well, okay.
Everyone calls you dusty green jeans. Everyone calls you that.
I had a pair of green jeans in junior high.
Really?
Because I had two pairs of JNCOs in my... And one of them where they were the skunks, and they were the black ones with the white stripe, and the other ones were big green. They actually weren't JNCO; they were JNCO style. They were Senet, which was a old skater brand.
Yeah, JCPenney's.
No way! I had to buy that from 35th Avenue, which was a skate shop on guess what street? 35th Avenue, Peck Highway.
Oh, okay.
So you're saying I'm a jeans guy.
You're a jeans guy.
On stage, I am. But other than that, I
always see you in jeans.
Not on this podcast. I'm right now, at you. Only because right I came from a show.
Okay. I don't have a pair of jeans.
That's not true.
I'm not joking.
You don't own a pair of jeans? All right. You don't get to share on this
no,
topic
No, I'm sorry.
Anymore.
I take it back. I have one pair of jeans
what
that
do you
someone
just have
gave
that for
me.
Bar mitzvahs?
Someone gave me.
What do you have that for when you need to get
just for when I need to buck a bronco. You know, when I need to get out there and I need to tumble with some weeds. Like, what do you need jeans for? I don't get...
Jeans are outdated. Let's retire jeans.
As like a grown man...
Let's put
man,
all the jeans in the freezer
every time
and leave
I
them
go,
in there.
And I look at a pair of jeans, I'm always like, for what? What am I going to wear these for? Where am I going that this is appropriate?
Yeah.
Jeans.
You guys keep emailing us at this. Don't make me come back there at gmail.com and leave us some voicemails at 619-292-8787 and give us your hot takes on this because I say you don't wash your jeans.
Hot takes?
I don't.
And but
in defense
jeans.
Of myself, that's fine. You just put them out. In defense of myself, I wear jeans for maybe an hour a day. Max. My kids so much so that when my kids see me in jeans, they assume I'm going to work.
Really?
Yeah. They're like, oh, dad's got to go.
You're a shorts guy at home.
No, I'm a sweats guy.
Sweats guy.
Exclusively. Sweats and nothing.
So you're depressed?
No, man. Sweats are the opposite of depression. Sweats are happy.
Do they have like, are they straight sweats or are they like cool?
It depends.
Like jogger sweats?
It depends. When I travel,
yeah,
I have a pair of joggers.
Nice.
Lulus. Oh, big flex.
Wow.
Big flex.
You know, we're going to have to start change your name.
Coming in
from
hot.
Dusty Green Jeans to Dusty Lululams.
Dusty Lululams. Oh, they're so comfortable.
You know, I do have, yeah, I don't have any, I have some pairs of pants that my brother gave me that are like 3 inches too long. So I haven't never,
you know
never
why
them.
They're okay? Because they're what Iron Man wore. Iron Man was
really?
Always in the Lulus. Oh, and then brother. Barry sold them and that's it. Anyways, guys, enjoy this episode. Dan, stop washing your jeans and then you won't have to keep buying new ones all the time.
Yeah.
And you know what? Teach your kids a little bit of coordination. Get them in a PE class, something like that.
Stop feeding them Cheetos all the time.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's probably half of
you
it.
You got some fat, uncoordinated kids, Dan.
I mean, you said it. Dustin went... we're not beating around the bush in this podcast anymore.
Everybody enjoy this
Shoot
episode with Johnny. You guys are the best. Take care. Have a good one.
See you guys.
Before we get going, is there anything that you would like us to promote for you?
Oh, maybe probably just the podcast I do with my friend Ruben Paul, which is called The Best.
Oh, I know Ruben.
Yeah, you know.
Well, I know.
You
Ruben
know you
is.
Of him, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's called The Best of Everything.
Nice.
Podcast. So
what's it about?
Well, you know what? It's some stand-up, but we mix it with, you know, we've had musicians and we had a Navy SEAL guy that I knew on there. So we mix it up.
Nice.
It's the best of everything. But it's a lot more, definitely, we end up with a lot of comedy
always,
in there as well.
Always,
and,
yeah.
And
it's such
comedic,
a dominating topic.
Comedic
yeah.
guests and stuff like that. Yeah. So, nice. But that's probably... that would be the main thing. We can just do that. Since this is a podcast, I'd
cool.
rather...
podcast,
know, podcast
listeners listen to podcasts.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly.
Is he still running Tuesdays at the factory?
Ruby Tuesday,
yeah.
dude. Yeah.
Are you there a lot? From time to time?
I am there not as much as he wants me there.
Oh, that's...
It's a weird thing because, you know, I see him every week. We do our podcast. And plus, we're in between going back and forth on like notes. And we see each other at the weekend, Long Beach or Hollywood Laugh Factory. And then it's like... And then he's like, yo, come down and then I'll throw you in 10 or this and that.
Yeah.
But it's weird because the funny thing is I don't want to be there a lot and I know I shouldn't care, but it's because I don't want comics going, oh, well, of course Sanchez is on again. And Johnny.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
We're so insecure. You're like, oh, I don't want anybody. Like, I'm only getting up at the factory because my friend
puts me right there, whatever. Yeah. It's a weird thing. And so he's like, yo, dude, just come down. You know. So I'm only, honestly, I really do his room. I probably go hang out more than I do spots.
Right.
I'll go down there because it's a nice vibe. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And...
I've hung a few times and I did that thing.
Did you introduce yourself or did you?
I did. And then we connected on Instagram and you know, it's one of those things that you're like, you know how it's hard to introduce yourself sometimes. Mm-hmm. And then it's also hard to be like, hey, there's no like, I don't even know how to say this to be like, hey, I'm, I do this.
Yeah, I know.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah, I'm not new, and I got a couple things, and I'm not demanding a spot or anything like that. But yeah, I know that because I run a great room, in San Diego, and it's been there 15 years, and I've had it for the last four, and it's in demand, and people want to work it, and so people come up to me a lot at the show, after the show, I get messages, and it's, you know, I the most, like, what I like the most is when somebody sends me a message or an email and goes, my name is this, here are my credits, here are the rooms that I play, and I go, okay, I know you're somebody.
But you can't do that
in a personal conversation. I know. You see me on Heart of the City? No? Okay.
and not to mention, especially on a night like that where he's running his room, he's being hit up by
constantly
all these comments anyway. So, but
while running a show,
While running the show, and it's so funny that you say that, because man, he'll forward me somebody's text messages.
Yes.
These comics come out of the woodworks.
Totally.
That he hasn't heard from in years. And he'll go, yo, dude, can you believe so-and-so? And it's literally the messages he'll get, like, hey, dude, I'm in town, so I'll see you that night. I know you're going to give me 15. You're my boy from, I mean, not asking, just straight up, like, you know, I know you're going to give me a, you know, it's just like, oh, there's an expectancy for it as well.
Right.
And, you know, some guys he hasn't heard from in literally like, you know, 15 years.
And now he runs a show at the Laugh Factory.
Correct.
This is fun because every once in a while we have recurring guests, people that I know very well.
Yeah.
And then we'll have comics who, for whatever reason, we just haven't crossed paths yet. Yeah. And one of the fun things about comedy is we might go on a run where we find each other at a couple different shows and we start working together and now we're just kind of guys, especially, you know, in LA or whatever it may be, or we may never work together again. And I'll be like, Johnny. But one of the nice things about the podcast is I feel like I can, like, cement, like we were talking before, this Alex Raymundo. I couldn't even remember his name.
Yeah.
And he was like, Ray.
Ray? Well, there's
something. Yeah, and I was trying not to be like some Mexican guy.
Listen, the list is not long. So, listen, there's a lot doing them, but there's not a lot that are known for, have been known for a while.
Right.
So, I mean, it's a small amount of us, man. So once you mentioned, Ron White.
Then
I knew exactly it was Alex.
And I said Ray. Yeah, Alex, Ray, Tequila. We got there.
That's right. Matter of fact, I think. You don't see somebody again. Like, you haven't. Well, Josh and I, who's hosting this week, Josh Nelson.
Mm-hmm. He's been on the pod before. Yeah.
Okay, and so we realized that we hadn't worked with each other. We did that gig at Channel Island with Patrick DeGear.
Oh, yeah.
We did that together. And he's like, dude, that was like 7 years ago. And I go, yeah, that's about right. And that's the last time I've seen him.
That's crazy.
You know, we don't all run into each other.
But did you do that thing where you just like picked up right away? Or was there like some friend? Like, because I feel like with comics, I haven't seen him for a while. I'm like, how's things? But we connect right away.
Yeah, well, I walked in and I recognized him. Yeah. And then he's like, hey, dude, we worked. And then for some reason, I pictured him at the improv.
Yeah.
So I was like, was it the improv? Did we work together at the improv?
Yeah.
And he's like, no, man.
Josh doesn't work improv.
Channel. And he's like, Channel Islands, Patrick Deacon. Oh, God, that gig, dude.
Yeah, that's fun. How did the gig... Well, tell me your story, and then I'll tell you mine on that one. So you've done it, maybe...
I had done it, I think, once or twice before. And then on that one we went to, for some reason, it was real sparse on that show that we did.
Barely anybody there.
With the other ones, it was pretty decent, and it was just an odd kind of night. He had the one guy that came there to do card tricks, so they moved everybody out of the room, and then they did the card tricks in where the pool tables are. Then they had everybody go back into the.
It's all wrong.
And it just seemed like it just threw things out of whack. Yeah. And I told Josh, I go, he goes, yeah, that's the one I was with you. I go, yeah,
the bad one.
I go, that's the one I really hate it, dude. Something just, maybe I was just irritated with the way things were set up or something,
right.
But I just think I got, I remember I got in a kind of a bad mood.
Yeah.
And it's
well, it's not an easy gig to get to and do. So for context, so there's a comedian in San Diego named Patrick DeGere, longtime comic, been in the game a long time. Mm-hmm. And he runs a gig at an army base or Navy or what is it?
I believe it's Point Winimi Navy base.
Okay.
But they called it the Channel Islands. Mm-hmm. Over there by Ventura.
Right. So you have to drive pretty much to Ventura, which is a big pain.
Especially for you guys here.
Even for you, it's a pain.
Yeah, even for us. Yes. Yeah.
You go 405 to 101 and you want to shoot yourself. It is, and everybody else out there with you.
Yes.
So you go out there and then you get on a military plane, right?
Small one.
A very small military
small
plane.
Small propeller.
Yeah.
and it's military, so it's not comfortable.
Nothing about it is comfortable.
No. Yeah. It's rickety. It's shaking.
Yeah.
And they take you over the island, over the channel. What is it, about 30 minutes?
Did you say? You keep telling your story because I've never actually done it. but that's the thing, because we made it. So you go over the fly and then you land and then there it's, you know, you perform for, are they all, they're all enlisted or is it CPECs or who's out there?
Oh man, I know. See, that's what I can't remember.
Yeah.
If they're enlisted or
military affiliated people.
Affiliated, but it's a big process, dude. Cause even when you get there on the base,
you know,
it takes them a while. They got to double check, which is right. Of course.
Then Getting on a base is very hard. Yeah. Yeah.
Then we land. And then they check us a little bit when we're going through, and then they take us to our rooms.
Yeah.
Now the only thing is, you're on this island. There is no Wi-Fi or anything.
Right.
The rooms only have, there's like picture tube televisions.
Yeah.
And no cable, just whatever local little channels they have. You cannot go back that night.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
You're staying the night.
Yeah.
So you do the gig and there.
It's a 2-day gig.
It's a 2-day gig with one show.
Right.
And
two long drives and two scary flights.
I believe it's one show. I don't think it's two.
Yeah, it's just one.
It's one, and it's in their local, their little, like a rec room bar that every base has.
Yep.
So you got the pool table, the darts on one side, and you've got the little lounge, and you go up in the lounge.
Oh,
right
there. So this is how you do the show. And it's been going on forever, and he does it 4 times a year or whatever.
Something like that.
Great that he does it.
Yes.
You know?
Absolutely. They appreciate it.
Of
they
course.
Really do.
So my experience with it, there was me and two other San Diego comedians, Zoltan Cassis and Jesse Egan and Patrick, and we were all going up, and I was middling, and Zoltz was headlining, and we were all splitting it 20 or
something,
25, something like that.
That sounds right.
So we're going, and it's a tense drive because there's traffic. Patrick, this is an important piece. Patrick is legally blind. So you have to take Patrick to the gig.
Correct. Everybody.
We're driving. We're in my minivan. We're going up. And so I'm driving. And, you know, for the most part, we're having a good time. But it's you're just sitting in a lot of traffic. And Patrick throws out, like, maybe an hour and a half into the drive, like, hey, there's a chance that we're not going to be able to fly because of weather, like that it's going to be too foggy. And he didn't tell us the day before. He didn't tell us any of that stuff.
When you were first leaving?
Yeah, exactly. He waits till we're in the car and driving through like Orange County. And we get there and, you know.
Wait. I'm just wondering, what was the, did anybody say anything or was it just quiet?
It was quiet. And then we go, will we still get paid if it doesn't happen? And he says, no. And now we're mad because we're like, okay, well, that means that we regardless of whether or not this gig happens, we still did the work. The comedy is the easy part. Getting to the gig is the pain.
I try to explain this to bookers sometimes. It's like, hey, man, you only have to do. I go, dude, I am driving to you or flying to
you're paying me to get there, not to do the stage time. Like it's.
Thank you. Yes.
That's easy. I do that for nothing all the time.
Yes.
So we get there and sure enough, it's bad sign. And we're delayed. And again, it's hard to get on a base. Everything is tense. Everything is very strict. There's paperwork. I remember the first time I went on a base, my wife's dad is in the Air Force, and we went to Edwards Air Force Base, and he's like a fairly jovial guy, and like we're going through, and he hands him his ID and explains the situation, and I notice he gets like very, you know, serious and not stern, but like stoic almost, and he was like, oh, yeah, you don't joke with 19-year-olds who have machine guns. Like there's no, this is not a place for humor and, you know, levity. Because it's very, you know, you're like, okay, this is very, so we get there and it gets delayed. There's one pilot, this like old dude who's like, I can do it. And we're like, just get it, we'll get on with him. It's fine. And everyone else is like, this is a terrible idea. Don't do it. So Finjo, they wouldn't let him take off. And if you think the ride up was tense. Fast forward to 5 hours later, after we drop him off, we like pretty much kick him out and drop him off first, and the three of us going eat street tacos in Chula Vista to talk about how mad we are at him.
And he wasn't able to give you any...
We didn't reimburse my gas. There was nothing. And that's not a knock on him. Like, right. You know, but yeah. He's been, you know, we're just like, dude, you have to negotiate in the contract that you at least get some of it.
There's something that has to be paid for the people traveling.
Exactly. Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah, it was the whole thing. So.
And you know what people don't understand about the, a lot of times with these military shows, man, like you said, they're stern. It can be different. The toughest ones that used to be... the Marines, you know, the Marine, yeah. do a Marine base. They're just because they're just so conditioned to be so hard.
Yeah. And,
you
not know. An ideal crowd. Yeah.
Yeah. But then dude, I ended up getting a call one time and they had not had any comedy for, the Navy SEALs out here, the SEAL team.
Oh, the amphibian one in Coronado.
Yeah,
yes. Or the Mira Mesa one.
What I think it was the Coronado. Yeah, I think it was,
that's where
was
they train them. Yeah.
SEAL team, one and three or something. But, I did one and I started doing more for them and they were asking me to bring comics and stuff like that.
Oh, that's awesome.
But it was, you know, sometimes it was trippy because if it was an event when they just had gotten back from their tour, then they were at least they were home.
Yeah.
And granted, sometimes they were in a weird mood because they may have lost a few friends, you know, but then the other one, but they were getting ready to be deployed and they bring their wives and they bring, oh dude, talk about trying to get people to laugh. It was, and I remember kept thinking to myself, I don't even know if this is a good idea.
The comedians.
How about just music?
Yeah.
Let them dance. Because they always had a band after the comedy. But I mean.
Let them dance and go home and get out of here.
And granted, they come up later and of course they're just like, thanks, man. We needed that. And you know.
Just not in a place for laughter. Yeah.
But you know, they just didn't know how to express it either as well. But, you know, you feel good, but those are always those weird gigs. And everybody that I booked to do it said the same thing. They were just like, hey man, I was happy to do it, but whoa, man, it was, you know, kind of pulling teeth. And it's no knock on them. It's just the condition, especially this Navy SEALs, dude. Like they're even above everybody.
It's amazing the, you know, how like emotion, like comedy can hit you sometimes in when your lowest points and it helps, but it's not necessarily always like a gut busting laughter. I watched like comedy was important to me as a kid because I didn't have I had friends and stuff, but that's what we would do. It was like very communal. We could come, we would watch. And I grew up in the Comedy Central era. So all the half hour specials, I knew them. Yeah, and I would watch them. I'd come home and I'd watch them and be excited.
It was such a big deal.
Oh yeah. And there were a couple, the big ones my family would watch together. I remember watching Robin Williams and Dana Carvey and stuff with my dad and stuff, but I would like obsess over. But do you remember like when you were a kid growing up, I don't know what your home life was like, but as far as like, where comedy hit you and why it was kind of important or was it even on your radar?
I grew up more, growing up in the early 80s, you know, even a tad of the late 70s, early 80s. Mm-hmm. So the comics for me were, I would see them on,
like HBO,
a little before, guys like, Rich Little, even Flip. I'm looking at Flip Wilson right here, and Steve Martin.
Yeah.
So they would do a lot
The guys in Vegas right now.
They would do a lot of appearances on award shows and things like that. And that was
Carson.
Yes, Carson. Things like that. Yeah. That's where I started seeing comedy. But I was a friend of mine in somewhere around fifth or sixth grade. He had an older brother, and he started. He would take his brother's Richard Pryor albums.
Yes.
And I was able to start. He started. He's like, man, you got to hear this, man.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was he had Cheech and Chong, yeah. and he had Pryor. So that was the early stuff that. And I yeah. remember sitting.
And you
back,
knew it was probably bad too.
Oh, it was like, and it was so fantastic. You know, we're like 13. It was more like 12, 13, right yeah. there in that junior high. And prior to that, it was Steve. It was all the cleaner guys. It was Steve Martin
and Cosby.
And of course,
yeah,
Cosby,
yeah.
Don Rickles. We'd see Don. I remember. Yeah. I still remember as a kid one time, Don Rickles came out on an award show. And he was doing his thing with the crowd.
Yeah.
And I remember he sees some lady and he's like, hey, how are you, lady? What are you, Chinese? Yeah. And the lady goes, no, I'm something, and which was nothing Asian. He's yeah. like, oh, well, then get your eyes fixed, right? Oh. And I remember thinking, oh, my parents were laughing their
yeah.
ass off.
Yeah.
And then he sees another lady.
Yeah.
He says, hey, man, what are you, Italian? And she goes, no, I'm Mexican. And he said, you should have stuck with Italian. And I remember feeling this weird, like, embarrassment. As a kid, I was just like, oh, but my parents, busting a gut, dude.
Dying.
Did right. not even phase them.
Right.
And I remember turning and seeing them like, oh, they're not offended by that he said that on like this award show
yeah.
this TV. It's so it made me realize, like, yeah. wow, it doesn't. So I would always watch how, you know, even guys like Rich Little, who did all these impressions.
Right.
And,
masterfully. Yeah.
Yes. But it wasn't until I started listening to Pryor and Cheech and Chong that, you know, I'm hearing stuff that I'm like, whoa, this is way heavy duty shit, man. And I remember I can still remember the very first bit I heard of Richard Pryor's, which was when Wino meets Dracula.
Yes.
And the fact that he does it, the perspective is only from the Wino's perspective. Yeah. He, you never hear Dracula say a word.
No.
But you know what's going on through the Wino going, what's up with your teeth? Blah. You know, like all that. And I remember sitting back and I'm like 13, 12, somewhere around there.
Yeah.
And I remember just going, how did he come up with this?
Yeah. Yeah.
This is like, who is this guy?
Mm-hmm.
And so it was early on for me, man, a lot of comedy. Yeah. I was doing a lot of impressions when I was a really little kid.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask, is what were you like as a kid?
As a kid, I would, we would watch TV.
And who's stuff. We? What's the household makeup?
My parents and three older sisters.
Nice.
No brothers.
No brothers, three. Mm. So the three older sisters, how much older are the sisters?
I'll go from oldest to young. Okay, the gaps are 10, 8, and 5.
Okay, so you're
almost an only child.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's pretty much an only child. And as a boy, you have nothing in common.
So
hopefully you didn't get the hand-me-down clothes and the whole thing.
No, but you know, that's funny you say that, because my dad would get so pissed because they would put me in a little dress, somebody's old dress, and walk me out to the living room, and my dad would him out of that, you know. So, but apparently I would watch, something would be on TV, somebody like a Flip Wilson or somebody or whatever. I used to do his Geraldine. He used to do a female character named Geraldine. And then I would do it and I would, he would do it. I'd come walking back and I would start doing those impressions. You know what I mean? So I was doing that early on, even though, thank goodness, I didn't become like an impressionist. Or
right,
anything. Like,
right.
Nothing against comics to do it, by the way.
No.
But I never was a guy that... even when I do guys nowadays, like if every now and then I'll do George Lopez or Paul Rodriguez or something like that.
Yeah.
I feel like I always sound like myself. Like, remember Phil Hartman? As great as Phil was with impressions, you always knew it was Phil Hartman.
Oh, that was Phil Hartman. Whether or not
he was doing Reagan or Clinton.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Or Frankenstein.
Even when he growled.
Or caveman lawyer.
That was the best.
That was, well, in addition to Comedy Central, Saturday Night Live was the thing for me too. Of just like
me too, dude. And I started with some of the original cast as a kid, watching them. And
that's
Bill
a good
Murray
example of like idols that you have that you end up nothing like too. Like, because I can't really do sketch. I don't really have an interest in it. I don't particularly like acting or doing characters or anything like that.
Yeah.
But I'm in love with it, and I'm like in awe of the people who can do it and just like transform into a different thing.
Yeah,
you know. So, okay, so you remember, so it's
so
the parents.
By the way, I've been a diehard SNL. Yeah. I have stayed with them even in the bad years.
Yeah, what do you call the bad years? Which are the
some
bad?
Some in the 80s.
Yes.
There was those gaps.
Before Eddie. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, before Eddie. And then there were some lulls in the, they had, I mean, once Dana Carvey and all those guys came on and Mike Myers and everything, it elevated back up again.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, there were just times where it even in some of the late 90s and stuff,
sure,
it got in some lulls. But dude, I still watch it. I mean, that was my ultimate goal.
Was to be on SNL.
When I got in LA, it's so funny, we have these plans, right?
Yeah.
So I remember my plan. This was my, I had it all planned out.
Yes.
So I'm from Central California.
Whereabout?
It's a town, city, a town called Tulare.
Tulare.
What's near it? Visalia.
Okay, that I know. Yeah,
that,
yeah,
drives
me,
that drives us crazy because everybody knows Visalia. Tulare is right next to it.
Oh, well, why do I? Visalia is bigger though, right?
Yeah, no? Visalia is bigger. There you go. I know.
I'm from Federal Way. People know Seattle. Don't get mad.
Oh, okay. Is that, okay. That's hilarious.
That's how we exist.
So it's right between Fresno and Bakersfield for people who aren't as familiar. So
the best, the most cultured parts of the country, of the state, right there. I mean, you just hit the Trinity right there.
Dude,
Fresno. Fresno, Visalia,
Bakersfield. Oh, shoot.
I always call Fresno the neck tattoo of California. And if you've never been, you'll go like, no, that checks
dude,
out.
That's but excellent.
That's the other one with, oh, and Modesto. Modesto, too.
Oh, that's all the way down.
Those, that
Modesto,
four.
Stockton, even that, each Stockton dude is even rougher than. But that's hilarious.
I went one time, I had to, this is a side story. We'll go back into
it. Worries.
This was a few years ago. Me and my dad are, I have to go get him from Oregon and drive him down to San Diego. He's in Oregon. And so he was in Eugene and I was like, hey dad, the middle place where the stopping, we're going to stop in Stockton. Stockton is where we're going to go. And he was like, I don't know, man. I've heard bad things about Stockton. I was like, what are you talking about? I was like, Stockton's just it's a city. It's not, we're going to be staying in some courtyard. We'll be fine. It's not a big deal. And he was like, I don't know. Is it like in a bad area of Stockton? I was like, what is this guy hearing? I've never heard any bad things about Stockton. And we're starting to pull up and he's like, this looks way different than the movie. And I'm like, what movie are you talking about? He goes, you know, that movie about the rappers straight out of Stockton.
Dude. Oh my God. Dude. How do you not have a shirt?
Straight out of Stockton,
dude. Oh man, that's great. But listen,
I didn't even correct him. I just let him go.
Damn, dude.
So anyways, you grew up.
You got to make that shirt for him.
I know. Yeah, straight out of Stockton.
Just so your dad has it. That is so fantastic, dude. You know, straight out of Stockton.
With all those rappers, straight out of Stockton.
But let me tell you, Stockton's rough, bro.
Is it?
It's got a rough area. Yes, man. Mm. That little area, the little... The three of them, Modesto, Lodi. Modesto's actually the
Lodi, not Lodi. Yeah, I know Lodi. Yeah,
Lodi, and then Stockton right in there. Yeah. So, so what were we talking about?
Well, you're from.
Oh yeah, and
right
so,
next to Visalia.
So so I say to myself, okay, I'm gonna move to LA.
Yeah,
I'm gonna do stand up for 4 years.
Uh huh.
Figure it's what people do for college.
Sure.
So I'll do 4 years of stand-up. I'm going to get I'll get cast on SNL.
Of course.
In my fourth year.
Yeah.
And then I'll do the typical contract. At the time, I think it was 4 or 5 on SNL. So I was like, I'll do four or five seasons of SNL.
Yeah.
And then go off and do the movies like Eddie Murphy.
Of course, yeah. 4 years, of course.
Dude.
Okay, so and that math, 7, 8 years in, will be the Beverly Hills Cop 2.
Yeah. I mean, my mindset was just like, you just go, you start doing funny things and you get on these shows.
Well,
and
it doesn't help that sometimes that does happen. It's like what I talked about. My kid, like right now.
Yeah, how
like,
old is your...
So my kids are 12, 10, and the youngest just turned 6.
Oh wow!
Yeah. So, and yours, kids?
I just have one. One girl, and she's 8.
Okay. Well, like, so I talk. It's a weird thing because, like, I talked to my wife and I were talking about this yesterday. We were saying, like, you know, my son like talks about like being like a YouTuber, and we're like, listen, like you're not gonna learn that under us. We're not gonna foster that skill. You're not gonna set up a YouTube channel. You don't even have regular internet access. We're not gonna give you anything to have that. But because he's like, when he says like, no, but people do that, I'm like, well, you are right. There is a bunch of people that do it. So when we talk about like, oh, you know, you get seen in 4 years, you get at SNL. The problem is a couple people have done that. And you're like, well, why not me?
Yeah. That's interesting. Now, why? Because that is what, I mean, it's almost like I know. Well, I wasn't that age. Is this the 12-year-old?
Yes, the 12-year-old. Okay. Yeah. Middle school. Yeah.
Okay. So we weren't really, I didn't start shooting stuff with a camcorder until like a little after high school.
Right.
But okay. So I see what you're saying, but how do you feel? I mean, obviously I know how you feel about it, but you know, it's a new forum.
Totally.
I mean, this is what some people do, and they can make a living at it. And he could be making slime and have money for college or something.
It's great.
So, but
I feel like this is a great question, and push back if you see flaw in it, because you know the thing with parenting right now in this generation is it's all new. There's no playbook.
Especially with what's happening.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So yeah, you are. You know, there is, but here's the thing. I'm in those spaces. I have a YouTube channel. I have a weekly podcast. Yeah. I have social media. I tell him all the time too. He's like, well, you have. And I go, son, if I didn't have this job, I would have a flip phone and a GPS in my car. That's all I would have.
We have to step up and do
this. It's a total expectations. Yeah. I remember the first time that like my agency like looked at me, they were like, how are your socials? I was like, what? Oh. Isn't that your job? And it's not,
anymore, man.
So we talk a lot about it, but we just say like, listen, like Melissa and I were saying, like, Melissa's my wife. Yeah. And I was like, you are at a sponge age where whenever you want to learn this, you can learn this on your own dime in your own time. But right now we need to teach you to be a respectful citizen. We need you to teach you to be kind. We need to teach you like basic moral human stuff. We need to teach you how to be safe. And we also need to teach you how to be like a student and how to learn, because this is the time for that type of education. And what I see so much there's a lot of things that I don't like about social media for kids. One is the danger.
Yeah.
The other is the addiction, you know, of just the feel of it. But I think the thing that gets me the most about it that I see is it's what when we were kids, people would say like, oh, you know, you don't want to be a pothead because, you know, it unmotivates you. And that's what social media does. Is it like for a kid, it becomes this all encompassing, unmotivating thing where that's all they want to do is just be on their phones. And Melissa and I, when we pick up our kids, we'll see kids walking out of school from middle school. Just, and you know, there's five of them in a row all talking. And if when we were a kid, we're throwing a football, we're wrestling each other, probably saying a homophobic slur because we didn't know better. Yeah. So I'm not saying it was all good. I'm just saying, but we were like active and busy. Yeah. And all that kind of
shoving, even punching each other in the nuts or something. Yeah, I mean
bonding.
Yes, good bonding.
Coming together as junior high males do. But my son has a friend who he told us that you know, she was like this great like dancer and was like very accomplished and was going on these routes and she was like getting recruited for these different dance schools in San Diego and stuff like that. And she's like, no, I just mostly like to do social media stuff now, and not even dance on social media. Like, she just wants to go home and be on her phone. So that's what I don't like about it. Is like, listen, it's already hard to motivate a kid and a real hard to motivate a teen. And this is just
No, this is interesting because I just read an interesting article somebody wrote on, you know, the young kid that Quaden.
We were talking about this yesterday.
Okay.
Yeah.
So now, regardless, I'm not here to get into whether it's his age and whether he's been doing on Instagram and followers.
Who knows? Yeah.
That's not even. But it was the person that the article was strictly about. How much should we as parents allow our kids? He just felt like the mom showing the video,
right?
Because this kid's going to be, you know, how's he going to feel about that 10 years from now, 15 years? And that's something actually, because, you know, I only put up like some cute videos of my daughter
here and there,
but every now and then, you know, it'll be a funny picture of her asleep with her mouth open, whatever. Right. I hadn't even thought.
I know.
About these little things that I post.
Right.
10 years from now, 15 years when she's, and they can circle back around or.
It's a really interesting thought. That whole story was a really interesting thing because you go, oh my gosh, this is so awful. Let's just work from the assumption that it's all true and everybody's good. And, we'll do that. Because who knows? This actually is airing next week. So we'll probably know a little bit more about it.
Right.
We'll work from that assumption.
Sure. Because
everything that we've seen that it's fake is nothing has been validated yet anyway.
Right.
So.
Correct.
I didn't watch the video because I was like, I know what this is going to be and I don't need this to shake me up.
And I wish I hadn't.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
I go, but I did have the thought of like, why was this recorded?
Yeah.
Not like, because, you know, I actually used to tell this joke once of my wife once texted me a picture of our youngest child, like, eating the Sharpie. And I thought it was hilarious and such proof that, like, you're different with your youngest kid, because she, like, didn't take the Sharpie out. She's like, I better document this, you know?
Yeah.
But, then you look at the effect of it all, and if this thing with Brad picking it up and this whole thing, and it's great.
And all this money.
Hugh Jackman's doing videos. You know, you got Wolverine as a friend now. All this money. You go, okay, well, who am I to say that wasn't... She was just trying to raise awareness to bullying. So that seems like a net positive, right?
Maybe. Yeah, I mean, I thought the same thing. Although, you know what? It's just kind of weird when you hear somebody else's perspective on it, like this writer. Then he's kind of saying, "Yeah, you know, but that's it's like an 8-minute video. It's not like just a couple of minutes, and then she shut up. She just keeps it on him for so long that even I was kind of like, oh man, when is she gonna? Because I was checking how long is this?
Yeah.
Like, it went on for a while, and I just, you know, it was brutal, and I just was like, I feel you on that, because it's like, you could say yes to him. What does he want? Does he want to do like funny stuff, like, or get on TikTok, or he just wants a YouTube channel?
He wants to and he hasn't like committed to this, but what he likes is watching like streamers, you know, like Fortnite streamers or Pokemon Go and stuff like that. Yep. And he's really into that. And I get it. I think that some of that stuff's funny and entertaining, and I can't be anti it because it's just personality driven. We're in the personality driven industry, you know? And so I don't, people are right that like that kind of stuff can, you know, you can make legitimate money, but those aren't skills that you need to learn right now. Like, you can learn.
He could do that in high school at least, don't you think?
Oh yeah. And I would encourage it. Learn how to edit videos, like editing videos graphic design, all that kind of stuff. That's not going anywhere.
Right.
That's the type of stuff that's going to be valuable forever. He's helped me. He helped me edit one of our episodes on this, and he knows how to use some of the programs. I was like, Joel, how do you? I got at a stopping point, you know, and he's used GarageBand in school, so I'm all for him learning that.
Yeah, but that's good stuff.
Yeah. Okay. Gosh, yeah, that would have been huge.
But you know, it's interesting because with my daughter, she loves that Roblox game.
Roblox, yeah.
You know, but then I get weird because it's like, it's interactive with these people. I'm like, who is this person talking back to you? And well, this is my friend. And she's only 8. And I told her, you know, her mom and I are not together, but, you know, we still got to both police all this stuff.
We're still
and I said,
parents,
hey, we got to be careful with all this.
It's,
you know, I guess I look back and I kind of think, it must have been like that for the parents of, you know, my generation, somewhere around, you know, you probably a little bit after me, but, you know, I was around when the first home video games were coming around with Atari and all that.
Sure.
And I remember then parents were just like, they're playing a video. They're playing this Space Invader thing all day.
Yeah.
You know, and that was a big deal. And the arcades were a big deal.
They're going to get addicted to jumping over barrels that Donkey Kong threw at them.
Right. Exactly.
Boing. Yeah. Boing. It's it is an interesting. Well, and mine was, so my generation of that was the equivalent was video game violence, because my generation was the intro of video game violence.
What was it? Was it the fighting?
Both. There was the shooter games, like some of the PC games, like Wolfenstein and stuff like that. Yeah. First person shooter games, GoldenEye that came out.
Okay.
Where you are the shooter.
That's right.
You know,
it was different than what we.
And they eased into it with Wolfenstein because you were killing Nazis and everybody was on board for that. It was like, what's the goal to kill Hitler? And like, well, I guess I can support that.
We're gonna let him have.
Yeah, exactly. That, yeah. And then the game. I remember Mortal Kombat was a big one.
I remember when that came.
Because it was blood and it was gory and it was awesome.
Yes.
But now you look back on it and you look at it like, you know, Grand Theft Auto and stuff.
Man.
Like,
I was just going to bring up Grand Theft.
Beating up hookers or whatever.
Dude, I know, man. And look at Call of Duty. It's just unbelievable. I don't really play. I'll jump in or I'll watch somebody do all the. I don't know anything about. Like Fortnite has been like the thing where I'm just like, I don't know what's going on with all that.
So
it's just too far removed for me. But it's just crazy that some kids are making money.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know?
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's, but I, no, you know what? Because at first when you said it, I was kind of going, well, let your son get creative.
Sure.
But now after explaining and hearing, yeah. you know, it's, an, it's 12's young, man. That's still so very young. Young. It's
yeah.
still very
and, young. And we're all for him learning a lot of things, but we're also like one of the big roles. Middle school, it feels like that, like you're 8 years old, you're still in full protection mode. Yeah. My job is to protect you. And keep you safe, because Roblox was a thing in our house too, and we're like, are you, we eventually were just like, oh, can you find something else, you know, like because we didn't like the communication with people you don't know.
Exactly.
And also there's like Roblox, like you can be, there's a lot of different types of games, and some of them are kind of like weird and dark, and you're like, what is this?
I've noticed she'll say things like, you know, no, we have to kill the guy over here, that, you know, and I'm just like, well, which part? I thought it was just this. And she's like, no, this is the other one. I know what you mean.
And we're like, man, back in my day, we just collected these coins and jumped over this dragon. But we're now, it's harder with the middle schooler, because now it's still protection, but also fostering independence.
Yeah.
And like, you have to give it to them. You do. Otherwise, they'll resent you. And like, that's part of, that's what adolescence is, right? Is like this going from child to adult. And we're like, we have to protect you. Like, we had this conversation recently where he loves to play Pokemon Go, and that's fun because, like, I play it with him, and we just, you know, and he'd be like, oh, and I travel a lot. So I was like, oh, I got this thing in Philadelphia or whatever. And he was going around our neighborhood, and we live near like a pretty busy street. And he was like, oh, I went over here, and you know, I was playing it here. And I was like, Joel, like, you can't stand on the corner of a busy street with a phone out like this. Like, this is like, you're just holding $1,000 out there. Like, hey, and I was like, no offense, but you're not that big. You know? And, but so like this, I don't know, of this like tension, and that's of protection independence. And that's why like they have some internet access, but it's all like super monitored as far as like they can watch YouTube, but it's like on the TV in the living room type stuff.
Right.
Cause you're on the internet, Mike. It doesn't take long to get to something that you and I would have never seen in our entire childhood.
Dude. Not at all.
It was nowhere to be found unless you witnessed it live for some reason, you know.
Your boy's 12, and then you have is there another boy or
no,
just
two girls after that boy, okay. girl. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's kind of cool that the boy's oldest.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. In his good moments, he's very protective, and then other moments, he's a 12-year-old boy. So, does your 8-year-old do the "I wish I had siblings" thing, or she just love being the only kid?
You know, every now and then I feel bad. I really wish we would have at least had one more.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just to develop those skills and have somebody. Plus, when she gets older. I try to find the positive of it is she's really great at meeting kids.
Right. Yeah.
So we go to a park, you know, if she doesn't feel like running around by herself, which she almost never does.
Right.
She just walks up and just goes, hi.
Yeah.
I mean, her nickname is B, but her real name's Donna, but she goes by B a lot. But a lot of times she'll just walk up. Hi, my name's B. You want to play?
Or do I
you
love it. You
know?
Yeah.
So she has great social skills, but every now and then, dude, like one in particular, we were at Dave and Buster's. And a family walked in, and it was the parents with about 3 or 4 kids, and it was like almost all girls. I think it was one boy and 3 girls. And they were all like, and she was, we were kind of eating, and then that was one of the times when she's like, I wish I had brother. Oh.
That's
you know,
hard.
It's hard, man. Yeah. So I really envy people that I met or I know and I have friends. Some of my friends, I watch them with their kids, like, three kids, you know, and I'll just go, oh man, that must be so great.
Times I look at one kid as like, that seems amazing. So it's the ultimate grass is greener type thing.
I know. I just, my thing is, you know, when she does get older, it's just going to be her, you know, and that's the only thing.
Yeah. Siblings are a special thing. But sometimes, you know, siblings are a good thing. And then siblings are sometimes the worst part of somebody's life. You know,
it happens.
Cause sometimes they turn out way different and you know, let me ask this and you don't have to answer it if it's too personal, but so how old was she when you and was it your wife, were you guys married or were you just together split?
We were married.
Okay.
And so she was around 3.
Okay.
So it's been a long, it's been early, dude. I'm, you know, it's that thing where I'm just like, what's this effect going to be?
Right,
is,
right.
Is what I, because, you know,
does she communicate about it? Does she talk about it? Is she, I mean, three is one of those ages where you're kind of right on the borderline as far as memory goes.
You know what? She really started to notice more when she was around kindergarten.
Okay.
Because I remember, even though we were not divorced, the divorce wasn't final till October, this last October.
Yeah, they take a long time. Yeah.
So it's, we were separated for a long time. And by that was our choice as well. We just kept kind of going, I don't think this is going to work, but let's stretch it out. But I think it was when she started kindergarten, the students had to stand up and say something about themselves, and my daughter stood up and said, you know, gave her name and then said, my mom and dad aren't together anymore, but they're great friends. She's the only one in the class who stood up and said that, dude. Kindergarten.
Were you there?
No, I wasn't. The teacher told me when I had come to, you know. And she goes, I just want to tell you, I mean, this is really wonderful, though. But, you know, the other kids were like, my name's so-and-so, and I like to go in my tree house, and I like puppies, and I like kitties. My mom and dad are not together, but they're great friends. Oh, so
seems like she's handling it great.
Yeah, and she's gotten it this whole time that, you know, and listen, this has been, you know, my wife is originally from South Carolina, Columbia, South Carolina. So I had moved back out there with her years ago because she was unhappy out in Southern Cal. So I walked away from what I do and I was the breadwinner.
You
and
were
I
about
was,
to be on SNL soon.
And
you
I was gonna, I was only about 14 years off. 15. But you know, that's the interesting too, by the way, the thing was, you know, I would watch Mad TV when it came on, and I had auditioned for Mad like 6 years in a row.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I
didn't
even get past, I never even got a call back, dude.
Yeah.
So I remember I was like, done.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm not even going out for MTV, Mad TV anymore.
Yeah.
I'm going to focus on trying to get my stuff to Lorne Michaels, you know, whatever. So 6 more years go by, something like that, somewhere around there. Yeah, that's right. Because it was the 13th season that I jumped on, and I would not do it. My reps would call me, hey, Mad TV's looking. I go, nope, I'm not going in.
Yeah.
But it was when Bobby Lee called me.
Yeah.
And Bobby goes, hey, dude, they really actually specifically are looking for a Latino guy. They've already gone through all the other guys through the years. And they don't know anybody.
Yeah.
He goes, I've been throwing your name to them for 5 years.
Yeah.
And he goes, but this is like, they really, you got it. And I remember I was like, no, Bobby, I'm not. And he goes, is that still with some impressions?
Yeah.
And he's like, you just have to do 3 characters, 3 original characters, and like 2 celebrity. I go, Bobby, you know I don't do celebrity impressions or whatever. He's like, can you just come up with something? Because I'm pushing for you. And then I felt bad, right? Somebody's trying to get you on a television show.
I mean, who carries more clout there than Bobby?
And Bobby was big. I think that was his thing.
San Diego comedy royalty, Bobby,
dude,
by the way.
Yes. And so then I sat back and I went, well, you know what I could do since they're looking for a Latino guy?
Yeah.
Why don't I just do Latino celebrities?
Yeah.
This way I don't have to worry about trying to match what Caliendo and all these guys
had
done.
Yeah.
There's no way.
Yeah.
So I ended up doing a sketch. I wrote a sketch called Star Trek, The Next Generation. And I put George Lopez, Paul Rodriguez, Mencia at the time, because he was the really hot one.
Yeah.
And Cheech Marin in a taco truck spaceship.
Yeah.
And I just had them going back and forth, knocking each other.
Yeah.
I literally put it together for the audition. And that, along with my little Joker character that I had already had from stage.
Yeah.
And dude, I ended up getting it. It was one of those
things.
And
did that air? Did that sketch go? Did they ever do it?
You know what? We tried.
Yeah.
Their budget, it was too hard to, because I was going to have to shoot it by myself.
Yeah.
In makeup. They were going to have to put me in front of a green screen.
Right.
Each person's makeup.
Yeah, that won't work.
It was a lot, dude.
I mean, maybe SNL could have afforded it, but.
Mad was, by the way, this was the budget. When I got on season 13.
Yeah.
I remember the first thing Bobby said was, listen, you're going to hear rumors that it's going to get canceled. Don't worry. They've been saying that for 8 years.
Yeah.
It's a cockroach. It's never going to go. Okay, great.
Yeah.
So the next season, which was the last one, 14, this was how low the budget was, dude.
Yeah.
They would tell us, look, we don't have to have the scene. And this was the live sketches.
Yeah.
We would like it in one take, but we have to have it in two. We're not shooting more than two. So it was like no flubbing, yeah. No missing your spot, no your mark.
Man.
When Bobby told me when he had first gotten on there, he was like, dude, we would do the sketch. We would do 8-10 takes.
Yeah.
We would do a couple on script and then we would just go for broke on the rest, yeah. And live audience and whatever. So I came in at a really, really rough time, dude. Yeah. The numbers were getting really low. Uh-huh. And the other thing was, I feel like I just missed social media because YouTube was new, but there was no Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. None of that was around yet, man. Cause I think I would have been able to, you know, accumulate quite a following just from that had social media.
Yeah. Well, the other Mad TV alum we've had on here was exactly that, was Angela Johnson.
Oh, yeah, I did it with Angela.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Angela was right. I mean, because Angela went, like you said, YouTube was there and it was new. And she had the thing that popped.
The Bunk Weekly.
Well, the first was the nail salon.
Oh, her stand-up.
And then went right onto this. And then it was like the tandem of like, hey, TV is still a thing. And it can still. And then boom. Because you're right. It was that kind of like time where they were just like, what's this thing? And it might not, you know.
Yep. And I, so her and I got cast together.
Yeah, that's
so
fun.
So they brought on, they wanted Latin people, so they got two.
Yeah.
And she got.
From NorCal.
Yes. Oh, that's funny, yeah. And her thing was, her notoriety at the time was the nail bit.
Exactly, yeah.
And so they were like, hey, this girl, and she was good with her impressions and stuff as well.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
She's very talented. And and then she did her Bunk Weekly character, and then it like millions of hits. And she did the one season with me, and then not the next season. But I everybody kept telling me, Johnny, you got to jump on this YouTube thing right now because you're coming off of it. I just was like, it's like telling the silent actor to start to go into talkies.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, there was resistance for it. I was just like, what?
Yeah.
I was just on TV though. They're like, but it's the new, you're going to reach people. I'm like, I'll let my next TV show.
You know what it is right now with me? It's like me and TikTok. I'm like, I refuse.
Dude,
I refuse.
So funny because
I've had this rant a few times on here, but go ahead.
Well, let me ask you something. But isn't it changing now? Because everybody's getting on TikTok.
Yes.
It's not just for the kids anymore.
I think, but I don't care. I don't, because I don't like it. That's because I'm working through this basic idea of not, my goal is not to sell tickets. My goal is to do work that I like and is very fulfilling and I enjoy. And I like doing stand-up and I like doing this. And I like doing jokes on Twitter and Instagram and stuff.
Okay.
I like doing that.
I got
and you. I've said this on this pod recently, and I said it to somebody else too, who told me, I was like, isn't it enough? I do Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, a weekly podcast, about 325 shows a year. Isn't it enough? Am I not doing... It's not like I'm not giving content out to the world. I give you a ton of free content.
Yeah.
And you know, TikTok's the thing. I was like, maybe. Because everyone said Vine was the thing, too. Oh, and then gone.
I could not do Vine, dude. I could not get into it. But, you know, for me, I've already... I don't know. It's one of those weird... I mean, I know I'm much older. I'm not even know if I could get away with it. I'd have to look, but... But you know who just posted, because they've been sending George Lopez some TikTok, some like Latino TikTok stuff, and he's reposting on his Instagram. And then his thing is like, he's like, hey guys, keep them coming. And actually, you know, I can, you know, he's putting in, I might start my own. So
whatever. We're about reaching time here, but I just want to.
Oh, okay.
No.
It always goes by so quick.
What I think is funny is that I just had a moment that right now we're just a couple of old dudes complaining about a changing world in a green room in Escondido.
While people are walking in and out and getting faxes.
Yeah, someone is doing the dishes 4 feet behind Johnny right now.
And then a couple of faxes came through. But by the way, I wanted to tell you, dude, even stand-up-wise, but even talking to you like this, you remind me, because I was talking to Ruben. I had I talked to Ruben today. He wanted to, you know about the room and everything.
Of course.
Great club.
You'd be great for it,
that, you know, so he was like, well, who you work, you know, so I started playing and he was like, oh yeah, what's it? Which, by the way, I can throw your name to where, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, I go, oh, he's doing great. He's killing, dude. He's a good writer. I go, he reminds me of a white Al Madrigal. There's, and now even just talking to you like this, and, yeah, and you're, there's certain, yeah, things you do, dude, like when you're like, no, is it that I'm not doing, isn't it enough? Like Al, I know Al really well.
Yeah.
And
I love Al. I'm a big fan. Let him, okay, know there's a white him in, yes, San Diego, dude, that I loves him.
I'm going to tell him, because his thing, we would sometimes even on a phone conversation, he'd be like, no, hey, guess what? Not doing it. I'm not doing it, man. So there's just those little points, but stand-up wise as well, it's a style, it's your writing, it's your cadence, oh, there's something,
you. Yeah,
but,
it's a high compliment, thank,
yeah,
you,
yeah, dude, I'm gonna let him know, so but I know we gotta run, so
I appreciate you doing this, yeah, man. Yeah, we got a show to do, and yeah, thanks for doing this.
You got it, thanks, bye-bye. Anytime, all right, bye.
Thanks for tuning in, everybody. If you have not done so already, please rate and subscribe. Follow us on all the social medias and share with all of your friends. Also, if you want to shoot us a note, you can email us at don'tmakemecomebackthere@gmail.com. Also, if you enjoyed this episode and you have not done so already, please go back and listen to all the episodes we've done before. Thanks so much, everybody.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.